It's time for another edition of San Luis Valley Voices, a production of SL Voices, your voice in the San Luis Valley. Without further ado, enjoy the program. Sponsorship of this program was provided by...
As you enter the Windsor Hotel, you take a step into an antiquated elegance as well as a step back in time. Built in 1874, the Windsor Hotel is one of Colorado's oldest hotels. The Windsor occupies nearly a half of a city block in the heart of historic and beautiful Del Norte. Construction of the Windsor Hotel started soon after the town was founded in 1871. Del Norte was a booming mining and ranching center in the last quarter of the 1800s and on the short list for the capital of Colorado before Denver got the final nod. The Windsor became the main social and commercial center of the area and remained a regional gathering spot for over 100 years. The town prospered until the early 1970s and the Windsor Hotel began to decline. The hotel went into major disrepair until a wrecking ball was literally waiting at the curb in 1993. But the Windsor was saved from demolition at the last minute by a generous local benefactor and his wife, Dr. Raymond and Mrs. Barbara Culp. The hotel lounge, Bistro Barbara, is named after Mrs. Culp in her honor. Over the past 18 years, several phases of stabilization have been successfully completed. A turn-of-the-century parlor, elegant dining rooms, and a living historic interpretive area were just the beginning. The Windsor now has 20 completely renovated and beautifully appointed rooms and suites with all the modern luxuries, as well as a relaxing guest lounge. Enjoy complimentary coffee or tea, close your eyes, and imagine what this area was like just 150 years ago. The Windsor Hotel is the perfect venue for weddings, special events, and business meetings with elegant event rooms and an outside courtyard. The Windsor Hotel offers a variety of packages for any occasion. As you enjoy your stay at the Windsor Hotel, you'll be treated to fine dining in the exquisite dining room with fresh chef creations featuring locally sourced delicacies like Haefeli's honey, Gosher organic sausages, off-family ranch, all-natural beef, and more. Our chef artfully creates unique selections daily. Bistro Barbara, named for the woman who, with her husband, literally saved the historic Windsor from certain demolition, is a warm and inviting bar, serving handcrafted cocktails created by barman and owner Kevin Haas. Also, among the beverage selections are some of Colorado's finest distilled spirits, along with local craft draft beers. The wine list is unique and incredible. Whether you're relaxing with old friends or making new ones, you'll love Bistro Barbara and its locally driven menu. But there's more to the story. Some believe the Windsor Hotel is still home to Maud, a woman whose heart was broken when she saw her husband with another woman. It's said that Maud eventually took her own life. Visit the hotel to hear her story. You'll also enjoy several exhibits from local talented artists. You may find an art piece you just have to purchase and make your own. We invite you to share a part of Colorado's rich history and enjoy all the hard work and labor that went into saving an exceptional building featuring phenomenal architecture that now serves her community as well as welcoming guests from all over. For more information or to make your reservations, visit their website, WindsorHotelDelNorte.com. That's WindsorHotelDelNorte.com. Or call them today at 719-657-9031. That's 719-657-9031. Located at 605 Grand Avenue in the historic town of Del Norte, Colorado. The Windsor Hotel is the place to make your base camp while exploring the unique features and attractions all across the San Luis Valley. Book your stay today.
Christopher O'Brien spent over a decade in the San Luis Valley learning about and investigating over 1,000 paranormal events, working with law enforcement, former military, ranchers, and an extensive network of skywatchers. He documented what may have been the most intense wave of unexplained activity ever seen in a single region of North America. That region, located in south-central Colorado and north-central New Mexico, is known as the San Luis Valley. His time, effort, and experiences resulted in a Mysterious Valley book trilogy and includes The Mysterious Valley, Enter the Valley, and Secrets of the Mysterious Valley. one of the largest databases of unusual activity in a single geographic region, is a direct result of his field investigations of UFO reports, unexplained livestock deaths, haunted sites, Native American legends, cryptozoology, and folklore found in the world's largest alpine valley. This database is available for access by all on his website, ourstrangeplanet.com. Christopher O'Brien was kind enough to spend an entire day with SL Voices to tell his stories, as well as stories shared with him by various people in the San Luis Valley. We gladly present this multi-part podcast series to our audience to inform, entertain, and enlighten. Enjoy!
I'm Adam, joining me is Martha, and we are talking with Christopher O'Brien.
This is podcast four.
Yeah, this is podcast four. Christopher, when we last talked to you, you left us with a cliffhanger about a stagecoach area and a couple sitting on a couch at night over in the Alamosa area.
Yeah, the house on River Road, out of all the haunted sites that I found out about and researched, that and the old Ace Inn, Trujillo's restaurant, I'm not sure what's there now. That one is pretty interesting as well. The house on River Road, quite a number of people died there, committed suicide, several hangings. It seemed like if you owned the house and you tried to live there, you would run into problems. If you rented, you'd just be haunted with poltergeist-type activity. You know, your standard dishes rearranged, chairs on the table, windows opening and closing, cold winds, just any number of what are normally considered poltergeist-type activity. There was also, when people were there in the house or calling the house and no one was home, a little boy would answer and get into conversations with people. And then when they would talk to the owners, they'd say, well, who was the little boy that was in your house? And they'd say, there was no little boy here. And so there was actually the ghost of a little boy that died there would somehow pick up the phone and talk to people when they called there. That was an interesting twist that I've not heard from other haunted sites. But this family was living there, the last family that was there before it became abandoned. The eldest son was a teenager. He was on the couch with his girlfriend. It's all in my book. I forget the exact details of what happened just before. But he was sitting there and something came and grabbed his earring. His ear was pierced and pulled the earring out of his ear and tore his ear, which it's a rather disconcerting to have that happen. And, you know, it couldn't have caught on his shirt, or he was just sitting there minding his own business and wham, he got hit and the ear got cloven. The house sat empty for a number of years and kids were going out there and hanging out and partying and stuff. And I think somebody lit a fire that got out of hand and the house started to burn. And because of its reputation, when the firemen got there, they didn't put it out. They just sat there and watched it burn. And at one point, the roof was all red hot with coals and two big holes appeared in the roof like eyes and a big mouth opened up and started like talking. The firemen there were just freaked out because it looked like the house was like, they said it was expressions of agony, holes in the roof mimicking like a face. I found that rather interesting. The house burnt down and I didn't really give the exact location of where it is for fear that people would go out there and trespass on private property and stuff. But if you look hard enough, you'll find it.
Well, again, we're in podcast four, and in this one, we want to touch on such things as haunted sites, paranormal activity, flying humans, skinwalkers. There's all kinds of things that can be discussed in this. So,
oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to turn it over to you and let you tell us what you know, what you've researched about this.
Way before all the ghost shows that have become so wildly popular, and I might add, so many clone examples of copycat programming, some of these shows are just ridiculous. I can't watch more than 5 minutes of them. Early on in my investigative work, Monty, our postmaster at the Crestone Post Office, owned the Ace Inn there, which used to be a private house, and then it became a restaurant. You know, it was a bar for a while, and then it became a restaurant. It's right there across from the liquor store, between the liquor store and the office. I'm not sure. Is it Trujillo still? I'm not sure. It was a pretty good Mexican restaurant for a while. There was a weird spirit or something in there that was reported for many years from the 40s all the way through the 90s into the 2000s. And it seemed to have issues with women because women were the ones that tend to be targeted by this thing. He would lock women in. He would pull their hair. There was a number of kind of tricksterish type poltergeist activity that happened to women in there. And supposedly it was the ghost of a boxer. Back in the 30s, I think they had sort of fight club type events in there, and they would stage private boxing matches. And I'm not sure if Jack Dempsey may have been involved some of the early days there. Of course, he grew up in Manassas.
Right.
Somehow the ghost has been associated with the death of a boxer who was killed in there. And Monty, he said he never believed any of this stuff until the girls that were in there, these waitresses and stuff, started reporting some pretty weird stuff happening to them. And so that was the first place that I found. And then subsequent to that, I found a number of very interesting haunted sites. I talk about them in Secrets of the Mysterious Valley and also if you are in Enter the Valley. You know, like every place around, pretty much any town that you go to, especially in England, has one or two even more interesting haunted sites. The spook lights over in the Silvercliff Cemetery are world famous. They actually turned all the lights off in the town to try to ID what the light source was that were creating these glowing light forms in this one area of the cemetery. And even with all the lights off, they could clearly see the light phenomenon. And it's fairly regular over there. It's the cemetery right outside of Westcliff. That's pretty famous. I think some of the lights that are seen going up and down just above the water surface in the Sanford area along the Sanford River, they could be considered spook lights. Up at Zapata Falls, in the parking lot, if you look directly east to the bare hillside that's about a quarter mile away, that's all denuded of trees, on certain nights when it seems like the activity is active in the valley, you'll see thousands of little blinking white lights like Christmas tree lights. If you're super quiet and you don't react emotionally, you just stay in a real neutral space, they'll even come down and approach you. And I've had stories of people with these lights all around them. These reports go all the way back into the 40s and 50s that these things were seen. Burl Lewis told me about them initially. That's probably the most common predictable sighting event that you can have in the valley are the Zapata Falls lights up there. And occasionally weird lights are seen inside the grotto there where the falls come down, about an eighth of a mile up from the parking lot. I have a feeling that there's some sort of nature spirit, if you will, that may be protecting that area up there. It's a Native American sacred site. There's quite a number of reports that I've had from people from there. So that's Zapata Falls State Park there. Go up there on the zigzag road up there and check it out right after sunset.
I understand flying humans is something that's seen in the Del Norte area.
Yeah, exactly. Thomas Pay, who had the Rio Grande files for a number of years on the NPR station there, he got a report from a woman over there that people were seeing flying humanoid that was described as like a cross between Dracula and a gargoyle. Go figure. Sean Woods, who was the chief investigator for the district attorney, saw what he thought was a flying humanoid right there headed towards the airport on State Street. Flew right across in front of his a van and his car. That freaked him out real good, and he was willing to go on the record about that. Back in 2010, 11, and 12, we had, or 9, 10, and 11, we had a whole flurry of sightings over there along the Rio Grande, mostly people jogging in the morning, would see this flying humanoid that would be quite distinct. There was a party of police officers over there, and one of them landed just outside of the light of the fire that they had. It was at night. And one of the officers got some cell phone footage of it and destroyed his phone. He was so freaked out about it. Another officer allegedly was up by the cemetery and saw one feeding on a roadkill on the side of the road. And when the lights shone on it, it looked at him and it had blood coming down out of its mouth and it flew off. Now, these are apocryphal stories that I have not personally investigated, but Thomas did some digging around there, and he found a number of people that saw this particular whatever it was. When we first did our San Luis Valley camera project, we had a camera on top of the antenna that was on top of the building there on Main Street where the AmigoNet office used to be. The first time we turned the camera on, our chief engineer turned it on, and the first thing he did, of course, was zoom in on the Great Sand Dunes. And much to his shock, two flying humanoids, one after another, flew across the image. And he was so freaked out. He hadn't really familiarized himself with the controls, except how to move the camera. He didn't realize that he could have hit record and recorded everything at that moment. He was about ready to quit the project because he was starting to get a little frustrated because we were having so many fits and starts. And he said after that happened, he was on board 100%. So, and this happened just before I found out about the other events that were happening in Del Norte. So I think the garbage man reported it. The mailman reported it. I might get in trouble for saying that, but this is what I was told. I'm not naming any names, but I think the sightings kind of petered out after a couple of years. I think we were up over a dozen different separate sightings. So go figure. I mean, these things have seen mostly in Mexico and Central America and stuff. And I've stumbled on a few reports in the United States, but this is pretty unusual. It created a bit of a stir over there at the time, if the rumors that I heard were correct.
Christopher, what are skinwalkers?
Skinwalkers are a very nasty type of Navajo or Apache sorcerer witch. There's a lot of misinformation out there about skinwalkers. The Ixchitl-Ixchi is what they're called in Diné. They're the most sinister, shall we say, of the three types of Diné witchcraft, the witchery way, and they're the darkest. They're a medicine society that is very ancient. They're responsible for corn in the culture. So they're very powerful because corn, of course, is a staple for food source for the Indians. And they've taken over control of corn, according to my Zuni elder friend, Clifford Mahudi. They're mostly associated with the Navajo, although there are black magicians or black sorcerers in all Native American traditions. The skinwalkers are the ones that are most organized, it would seem, and the ones with the greatest power. They're said to be able to don the skin of an animal and shapeshift into that animal, hence the name. They also are able, if you lock eyes with one, they're able to somehow project themselves, their will, inside of you and turn you into a zombie. And although you're totally awake and conscious, they move your limbs. They make you walk around. They make you do things and say things, and you have no control over it, which is a little disconcerting, I would say.
Yeah.
At night, if you see a skinwalker, their eyes shine. And when they're in their animal form, their eyes don't shine when light hits them. They can take fingernail clippings, hair. They can take genetic material from you and use it to do harm to you magically. They use interesting weapons made out of corpse powder is one. And also they have these bone projectiles that they can shoot like a dart and make you sicken and die. That's why Navajos never leave their shoes outside, because skinwalker can use foot jam to render bad spells on you. You can hire them to be hitmen and kill people. If you identify a skinwalker publicly, within 24 hours, they will die. They are most often reported hitchhiking and running alongside automobiles. No matter how fast you go, they can keep up with you. There's been stories from law enforcement that I've heard, that I've been told, that are just mind-blowing. And normally you think, you know, cops are not going to be telling you things that aren't true. They're going to be as truthful as you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
And two Navajo Rangers who have come out in the past few years, Stanley Milford and Jonathan Downs, one of them is still a ranger, the other's retired. They came out and they've been publicly talking about some of the skinwalker cases that they investigated. Gabe Valdez, who was the head of the barracks there in Dulce for the New Mexico State Patrol, he had a skinwalker run alongside his squad car one time. And he said he was doing over 60, 70 miles an hour, and this thing kept up with him. So the rule of thumb is, if you're passing along in the Southwest at night and you see somebody hitchhiking, don't pick them up.
That's a good rule of thumb.
But we've had a mystery hitchhiker north of Cuesta that got into the front seat of the police chief of Cuesta and sat next to him on the seat, all dressed in her finest red evening wear. And it was 2 o'clock in the morning. He's returning from a sale barn with an empty trailer, stock trailer, driving into Cuesta. And he was right there about the Tres Ritos Ranch area. And he saw this woman walking down the street. So he stopped to give her a ride. And he looked over and noticed that she had goat's legs and cloven hooves for feet. And as soon as he saw that, she disappeared from the front seat of his truck. And he was so freaked out by this, he went directly to the police station, had the dispatcher wake his nephew up, who was the chief of police, and he insisted on filing an official report. They tried to talk him out of it, and he said, "No, I'm filing a report." And so he did. There's supposedly, you know, the devil shows up at dances during Lent, which is some of the most amazing stories that I've heard in all my research, some of them with actual names attached to them. They closed down the Isleta Casino over the entire Easter weekend in 98, I believe, because there was a devil going around giving people quarters when they'd run out of money and they would hit the jackpot. And they exorcised the entire casino because of these stories.
Wow.
So, yeah, you got to read my books. All this stuff is in there. I'm just fascinated by these urban legends and these stories that you can't quite pin down, but they're really prevalent. They grow legs and walk through the culture. They're memes that propagate themselves. There have been Devil at the Dance type stories that go all the way up into the Southern Valley area and the Del Norte. I think it would be the furthest north. Caneos, Antonito, San Luis. You know, there's La Llorona, of course, the wailing woman that walks along the canals, wailing for her drowned children. There's a ton of really cool stories that once you get digging into the folklore of the valley. I had a John born on St. John's Day who was, if you're christened John and you're born on St. John's Day, you're the only person that naturally is able to hold a witch in check. And so he was in training to hold witches, and he was elk hunting up, I guess, up in the Caneas area there. And no, it was on Greeny, actually, Cat Creek Greeny area. He had a big bull elk in his sights, and he was about ready to shoot it with his bow. And he heard a twig crack off to his side. And of course, the elk heard it too and ran off. Right as the twig cracked, he kind of looked over. And there was like this little 2-foot-tall guy all dressed in green. And he said he was a super white boy, but he didn't use any sunscreen because he had the worst sunburn he'd ever seen. And I'm sitting there, wait a minute, what's wrong with this? A Kudandera in training that sees a leprechaun on vacation. What's wrong with this picture? 2 weeks later, another report. A family was having a picnic about a quarter mile down the hill, and they saw a little guy that was standing there at the edge of a meadow watching them as they were having their picnic. Described the exact same way. So, hey, you know, I guess leprechauns are running out of places to hide and they're emigrating here to the San Luis Valley. I mean, that, now those are real illegal aliens, let me tell you. Yeah, Trooping Fairies. I had a case that just blew my mind. World famous musician, one of the top shelf keyboard players in Hollywood, 600 film and TV credits, played on the theme for Star Trek, for The Twilight Zone, Donna Reed, The Untouchables, Naked City, all those old golden age of TV shows. He was the keyboard player for the themes and the music. He was in his studio composing and some movement caught his eye. He looked over and trooping through a closed door were 8 little fairies or elves or whatever you want to call them. They were about 8 inches high. They had robes that went down to the floor and these weird Keystone Cop type police hats on that stuck up in the air. And he said they trooped across his floor of his studio right within feet of him and then marched out the door or the wall of the studio. And he said, like, the 7 of them went and then the last one stood before he went through the wall, turned around, looked at him and gave him a dirty look. I love that story. He called me up. He says, there's been so much weird stuff going on here. This is it. I just have to tell you what's going on here. And he wasn't going to call me and tell me anything, but he called me up and he says, I know you're going to think I'm crazy, but I swear to God, this just happened. And he saw these undulating forms, I call prairie dragons, that his dog would chase around. They're about 3 feet long, 2 feet long. They're partially visible. They undulate like a snake. You know, they kind of go up and down. They have an undulating motion. His dog would chase them. They wouldn't leave tracks. One came out of his stereo cabinet and went across the floor once. I saw one when I was refinishing his floors. All this stuff is coming from somewhere.
Where do you think it's coming from?
Well, I think there's rents, there's rips in the fabric of reality. And I've ID'd where some of these things are coming from in the Baca area. And there's a 100 square yard area that tends to be, I think, the central point that is where a lot of this stuff, I think, is coming and going. I've been able to photograph some very interesting phenomena there that's on my website. And I've had stories from all the houses around that area that indicate that they're just on the outside of the bullseye of this particular portal, doorway, window, rent in the fabric of reality, whatever. And I think that they're all coming and going from this one spot. I think there's other spots like this around the valley. I think there's one in the Sangres that moves. It's a doorway that people report that opens up and they try to hike up there to find it and it's gone. Numerous reports of this. That's generally between Blanca and the dunes. There's some stories of a doorway in a rock that overhangs the North Crestone Trail, just up from the trailhead, where these red glowing balls come in and out of the rock. A number of reports from hikers about that. And I think that Witch Rock down there on the road from Sanford across to San Luis there by the King's Mine.
Mm-hmm.
There's some very interesting reports that come from there. You know, there's a number of them. I have a map that has about 70 interesting areas of note around the valley. It's on Google Maps, and there's a little pins on all the areas to check out. And if you click on it, there's a description of the place in a photograph. So if you go to my website and fish around there, you can find the map and then go to it. It's already had, I don't know, 60,000 hits, so it's become pretty popular. It's the only map of its kind that shows you all the cool spots. Well, not all, but, you know, the noteworthy spots. If I had all the spots, it'd be so covered with pins, you wouldn't be able to see. I really do try to share my data with anybody that's interested enough to investigate it. And if you're going to visit the valley, it's always nice to have a little guide so that you can go around and check out some of the more cooler spots that we got.
I have actually visited Witch Rock that you mentioned. What is the story behind Witch Rock?
Well, it just tends to be a congregation point for some darker types who practice darker things in the valley. And it just has a reputation of being a spot where strange things happen and strange individuals are seen there. It all depends on who you talk to. The real devout Christians would say that it's the devil and it's evil. And other people would say it's a power spot and certain individuals know it. And they somehow are able to utilize the power there. I don't get a particular negative vibe from it myself, but other people that I take there, they have to leave. They can't hang out. So, you know, it depends on where your sensitivities are, I guess. I know it has a pretty interesting reputation locally there.
What we've been covering kind of really leads into a question we received. You likely hear a lot of rumors and strange stories that sometimes turn out to be untrue or even complete nonsense. Are there a couple of those you could share that were just too weird or improbable to be put into your books?
You know, to be frank, no. That's one thing about the Valley. I think 99% of the people that contact me truly believe that they have had an unusual experience. I've only been hoaxed, I think, one time where a woman claimed that she found this glass crystal skull in Moffett on a fence line and pretended like she didn't know where it came from when she knew where it came from. I ended up digging into it and found out that it was a reject from a glassblower up in Denver, but she tried to palm it off as something high strange. However, the number of things that happened around it are very unusual. A lot of weird stuff happened in the presence of this little skull, which kind of led me to a theory that if you have something that people think is high strange or is sacred or is, has power, just the belief that it does can create manifestation of phenomena. I think the power of belief is something that we have not scientifically done enough study. You know, just the placebo effect, for instance, in medical trials. People believing that something will cure them sometimes will cure them, even though it's a benign substance or benign medicine. So, you know, I think it's really an area that hasn't had enough attention was collective power of belief and the manifestation of phenomena. David Perkins, one of my real close friends and mentor, has a theory that possibly the cattle mutilation phenomenon could be a collective unconscious manifestation of a warning. Cattle are the most detrimental life form on the planet besides humans. They're the cause of more freshwater pollution, the creation of deserts. They're the biggest reason why we're cutting down the rainforest to make room for more cattle. Some of the diseases that spring from cattle are just horrific. They're just really bad for the environment, especially if they're kept in one place. And so he thinks that collectively we all know this, and that because we're in beef-eating countries, countries that consume a lot of meat, especially beef, where the mutilation phenomenon occurs, that we're collectively, we know that they're bad for the environment, so we're manifesting the mutilations as a warning to ourselves. That makes more sense to me than aliens coming from another planet to, you know, take the sexual organs of a cow. You know, I think we need to get a little bit more creative with our thinking, look at alternative ways of explaining phenomenal events as opposed to being lazy and blaming it on aliens. I know it's a popular thing to do, but it's untenable. It's not a good, solid avenue, I think, of research. We don't have one shred of unequivocal evidence to suggest that anything out there is coming to visit us here. And I defy anybody to show me physical, scientific, irrefutable evidence of alien visitation. There's lots of circumstantial evidence. There's lots of evidence that could be construed as that, but nothing definitive.
This has been a very interesting podcast series. So tell us, what is next? What's coming up? What's new? What's going on in the infamous world of Christopher O'Brien?
Well, again, I've got the UFODAP San Luis Valley Camera Project going. We want to get the second and third camera up and then our multi-instrument package up. We're also using deep learning and artificial intelligence to train our software to discriminate between mundane events like swallows flying by, insects, that sort of thing. Strange cloud formations can trigger the record function. Now, don't forget, this is a system that's automatic when it's properly functioning. It is sitting there idling on idle. And when an event happens, everything goes into motion. The nearest camera starts zooming in. The other cameras swing around with the coordinate data, the GPS coordinate data. They focus on the event. Everything goes into record mode. Our software has targeting following. A targeting box, a bounding box appears and keeps the object centered in the screen. Everything goes into record. All our instruments are then start recording. It's all operated instantaneously over the internet. It's autonomous. I could be operating the system right now from where I'm sitting here in upstate New York. It's the next step forward in hard science in the UFO realm. This has been a dream of mine for over 20 years. The technology is finally affordable and robust enough to be able to accomplish this. And I'm really excited about the opportunity to document some of the events that go on there. We do have a prime location, front row and center, right there on 17, across from the dunes. We've already sold, I think, 3 systems now. One is going in next to the infamous Skinwalker Ranch up in Utah. We have interest from Australia, Switzerland, Italy, all over the United States. We've already sold, I think, 2 or 3 systems. If you'd like to be involved in the San Luis Valley Camera Project, we'd love to get some volunteer help. We do have a GoFundMe site. There's a link at ufodap.com, ufodap.com. We are trying to get funding to get our last setup done, the last 2 cameras. If you want to find out more about my information, obviously my books are available on Amazon or at my website, OurStrangePlanet.com. If you send me some bucks, I'll sign a copy for you and shoot it off to you. Thank you guys for having me on. I hope this is the first of many shows. I just licked the tip of the iceberg here.
Well, you've also got DVDs and music available on your website.
Yeah, and I do.
And that's very interesting. And all of these links that you've mentioned will be, this is for our listeners, will be on these podcast pages. So you'll be able to find them. So even if maybe we didn't give it a website exactly correctly, it will be correct on the podcast page.
Make it easy for everybody to find it.
And please, please do report sightings and write everything down. Keep a big calendar there handy. And when something happens, write the time in the date box, write the time, the duration, and a brief little description to remind yourself. I'd really like to include these sightings in my database. So be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
And your contact information to send those stories to is on your website, correct?
Correct.
Which is ourstrangeplanet.com. Christopher, thank you so much for taking so much time to talk to us about all these fascinating things, and we look forward to getting with you again sometime soon and possibly recording even more.
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
Christopher O'Brien's latest book, Stalking the Herd, is being called one of the most important books ever written, examining our relationship with cattle and how this has manifested into the modern cattle mutilation mystery. Visit his website, OurStrangePlanet.com, for so much more information, as well as purchasing his books and DVDs. Also, visit his website, UFODAP.com. That's UFODAP.com, to learn more about his camera project, helping to capture events all across the nation. SL Voices would like to thank Christopher O'Brien and his podcast sponsors for making this special multi-part series possible.
The views and opinions expressed by the San Luis Valley Voices podcast guests are solely their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions or beliefs of SL Voices, its staff, members, their respective parent company, or affiliates. The information provided is for educational, informational, or entertainment purposes only. The guests' opinions are based on information they consider reliable, but neither SL Voices nor its parent companies or affiliates warrant its completeness or accuracy. SL Voices will not be held responsible or liable in any way for the information or opinions expressed by guests of this or any other San Luis Valley Voices podcast.
Sponsorship for the podcast you just heard was provided by...
As you enter the Windsor Hotel, you take a step into an antiquated elegance as well as a step back in time. Built in 1874, the Windsor Hotel is one of Colorado's oldest hotels. The Windsor occupies nearly a half of a city block in the heart of historic and beautiful Del Norte. Construction of the Windsor Hotel started soon after the town was founded in 1871. Del Norte was a booming mining and ranching center in the last quarter of the 1800s and on the short list for the capital of Colorado before Denver got the final nod. The Windsor became the main social and commercial center of the area and remained a regional gathering spot for over 100 years.
The town prospered until the early 1970s, and the Windsor Hotel began to decline. The hotel went into major disrepair until a wrecking ball was literally waiting at the curb in 1993. But the Windsor was saved from demolition at the last minute by a generous local benefactor and his wife, Dr. Raymond and Mrs. Barbara Culp. The hotel lounge, Bistro Barbara, is named after Mrs. Culp in her honor. Over the past 18 years, several phases of stabilization have been successfully completed. A turn-of-the-century parlor, elegant dining rooms, and a living historic interpretive area were just the beginning. The Windsor now has 20 completely renovated and beautifully appointed rooms and suites with all the modern luxuries, as well as a relaxing guest lounge. Enjoy complimentary coffee or tea, close your eyes, and imagine what this area was like just 150 years ago. The Windsor Hotel is the perfect venue for weddings, special events, and business meetings with elegant event rooms and an outside courtyard. The Windsor Hotel offers a variety of packages for any occasion. As you enjoy your stay at the Windsor Hotel, you'll be treated to fine dining in the exquisite dining room with fresh chef creations featuring locally sourced delicacies like Haefeli's honey, Gosser organic sausages, Off Family Ranch all-natural beef, and more. Our chef artfully creates unique selections daily. Bistro Barbara, named for the woman who, with her husband, literally saved the historic Windsor from certain demolition, is a warm and inviting bar, serving handcrafted cocktails created by barman and owner Kevin Haas. Also, among the beverage selections are some of Colorado's finest distilled spirits, along with local craft draft beers. The wine list is unique and incredible. Whether you're relaxing with old friends or making new ones, you'll love Bistro Barbara and its locally driven menu. But there's more to the story. Some believe the Windsor Hotel is still home to Maud, a woman whose heart was broken when she saw her husband with another woman. It's said that Maud eventually took her own life. Visit the hotel to hear her story. You'll also enjoy several exhibits from local talented artists. You may find an art piece you just have to purchase and make your own. We invite you to share a part of Colorado's rich history and enjoy all the hard work and labor that went into saving an exceptional building featuring phenomenal architecture that now serves her community, as well as welcoming guests from all over. For more information or to make your reservations, visit their website, WindsorHotelDelNorte.com. That's WindsorHotelDelNorte.com. Or call them today at 719-657-9031. That's 719-657-9031. Located at 605 Grand Avenue in the historic town of Del Norte, Colorado. The Windsor Hotel is the place to make your base camp while exploring the unique features and attractions all across the San Luis Valley. Book your stay today.
We appreciate you telling your friends to listen to the podcast on slvoices.com and check out our extensive calendar of events. More listings in one location than any other website around. You can help spread the word too by joining our Facebook group, SL Voices, Your Voice in the San Luis Valley, and liking our posts on other social media outlets. Also, check out our Instagram page for behind-the-scenes looks at what we do. And please, patronize our local sponsors. Remember to support the businesses here in the Valley. Most are owned and operated by your family, friends, and neighbors. We all love this area, want to see it flourish, and you can help by buying and supporting locally in your own and surrounding communities. Check back for another local podcast soon. Until then, this has been San Luis Valley Voices, a production of SL Voices, your voice in the San Luis Valley.